I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I am Mike Lupica of MLB.com and MSNBC, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, which we're having on Tuesday because, well, you don't want to know what happened on the street where our podcast lives in New York City.
I have often walked.
Oh, sorry. Okay, God, I never want to open you up to singing. Anyway, there is so much for us to discuss, and I'm actually glad that we're doing this on Tuesday morning because once more, on Monday Night Football, and we will get to Sunday Night Football in a few minutes, we got to see Aaron Rodgers be Aaron Rodgers, run the table with the last 10 points of the game, redemption for Mason Crosby, but the story of this game is Mr. Rodgers, who on the play before he scrambles to keep the last drive going, looked like he had hurt his knee again. And Mitch, I'll start with that play. Because here's Rodgers on a bum leg, on a play that he scrambled around. The play, I think, from snap to touchdown took about 12 or 13 seconds, and it opens up everything that happened after that.
In the NFL, where highlights are hardly hard to come by, what Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and we'll talk about that a little later on, continue to do in terms of like continuing to impress you. It's so hard for Aaron Rodgers to impress you anymore because he's got such a ridiculous litany of impressive things that he's done at the end of games, including the absolute ultimate end of a game, a Hail Mary. And yet what he did on both of those drives, you know, the drive to tie it up and then the drive to go down.
Mitch, how about the touchdown throw to Adams in the corner of the end zone over a guy who was jumping.
You watch these things in slow motion. You see these guys jump and you see them, the defender miss by like 2 inches. And you say, how does he make that throw over a guy when the guy hadn't even jumped yet when he let the ball go? Four plays, Bob, 58 yards to get to the tying. Four plays, 58 yards to get to tie the score up. 10 plays, 81 yards in a minute seven. Okay, in 67 seconds, he drives him 81 yards down the field when you think it can't be done. And of course, Mason Crosby, who looked like he was in junior high against the Lions, comes out and kicks the winning field goal, and the Packers are the Packers again.
You know, I was having this discussion yesterday afternoon prior to all this, which was, are we going to be looking back in history at a time and saying, how did they only win one Super Bowl with that guy?
He's undercoached, that's why. And I swear to God, if they had lost to the 49ers last week, there were Packer fans I know who were thinking, could McCarthy get fired on the bye week? And you know what the shame, Bob, is? The shame of this era in football is that the two number 12s, Aaron Rodgers and Brady, never faced off in a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Yeah. Well, it still could happen.
Yeah. I don't know. That was such a troubling game. And then Rodgers at the end, he's going along, and ends up with, Mitch, 25 for 46, 425 yards. Once again, he plays a game without an interception. I think he's 12-1. On the season. But Mitch, you're right. Everything's going against them last night, okay? Right. The 49ers, even with Beathard at quarterback, are having a career night. The season was supposed to be over after Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt. It's 30-23, but then as soon as they started moving the ball on the touchdown drive, you're thinking, okay, this could happen. Kevin King makes a great interception on the 49ers' last possession. And then again, for anybody who hasn't seen it, believe me, it's readily available on the internet today. You got to see Rodgers tucking that ball down on that bad leg, running straight down. Mitch, it was
straight
like
down the middle of the field.
Right down the middle.
And he's fast. I mean, you know, that's the other thing you forget about him, right? He's not just elusive. For a guy his age and all his miles, he's fast. And Mike, as impressive as the super highlight reel is, if you step back to the 30,000 foot view of this, here's what makes the Packers under Rodgers, here's what makes the Patriots under Brady unique to the rest of the league. Neither one of these teams won their games over the weekend to push their team to 6-0.
Right.
Quite the opposite.
Right.
They were reeling a little bit. They got their asses kicked by the Lions. You know, that doesn't happen. The Lions have now beaten them 3 times in a row. That's ridiculous. I don't think the Lions could say that about anybody. And so, you know, here they come back home They're 2-2-1 at this point of the season. You know, we're past the first quarter of the season. They're 2-2-1, and they are in danger at home of going 2-3-1.
Yep.
And something kicks in to guys like Rodgers or guys like Tom Brady, who also was facing, you know, again, not pushing his team to 6-0, but trying to find their way back to excellence, taking on the most talented team everybody thought in football, the Kansas City Chiefs. And they win when they have to keep their seasons from going off the rails until everything seems to get fixed, which seems to happen with the Packers, which seems to happen with the Patriots, and they wind up in the postseason where then you expect the excellence. That, to me, is the magic of these two guys and their two franchises under them, that when the ship starts to, you know, rock a little bit, you can count on them for that game that won't let it tip over.
And Mitch, you know what? You know what we also see in these moments from Rodgers? And we talked about this for years when the Sports Reporters was on Sunday morning. We have talked about it since we have been fortunate enough to keep this going and start our podcast, okay? There are moments, and I always make this clear. I'm not talking. I don't say that athletic character is you know, warlike character. Okay, but athletic character exists, and in moments like this, you don't just see the force of Rodgers' immense talent for this game. Okay, you see his athletic character kick in, and then after the game, Mitch and Bob, you see why this guy is as great a teammate as there is in the sport, because you saw. What did he want to talk about after the game? He Mason wanted Crosby. To talk about the redemption of his place kicker.
Yeah. Mm. Well, yeah, I think this is pretty self-evident. You know, we've come to know the same kind of team feeling here with our number 12. And by the way, just in speaking about the comeback, and I mean, in his case, in the Patriots' case, what Brady has gotten, it's a plasma for him, is Edelman. It's so clear. From the first possession last week and his first game back, the idea he went to him and he it's such a comfort safety blanket, you know, for him, you know, and that.
And guess what? Rodgers now has a guy, Mitch and Bob, Jimmy Graham seems to, and Davante Adams. It's like, who do I want to go to on this big play where we got to get 20 or 25 yards?
And then same thing, Mike, and then extend here. Gronk's quiet all night. We'll get to that game. But I'm just saying, for example, and then suddenly he makes two huge, huge plays in the most propitious moment. But for Brady, I would just expect, so getting Edelman made a huge difference. And then he also picks up Gordon along the way. And if we have no idea, you know, what the future holds personally for Josh Gordon. But if, in fact, he stays on the field and gives him a season, I think we can safely say that we'll be sitting here some Monday and Friday talking about the fantastic play that Gordon made that no other Patriot wide receiver.
Okay, we're going to get to Sunday night. Okay, yeah. But the game that we're that just got played. Okay, was such Mitch. How many times have we seen? You're right. How many times have we seen this comeback? They have now, Mitch. They played six games this year. Okay, Rodgers has done this twice. He did it against the Bears when we thought his season might be over. Okay, and in a different way, we're thinking, oh my God, if they do go into the bye week at 2-3-1. Then maybe they put themselves into another hole, because it seems like the Packers are always coming out of a hole. And then he looks like he's in his office in these moments. It's Lambeau Field. He's where he's supposed to be. And Davante Adams is no Randall Cobb last night. And Davante Adams is becoming a star in front of our eyes.
Well, it's what the really great players in the NFL not only do, but now have to do, because it's such a war of attrition over the course of a season that, and this, by the way, is a byproduct of protecting the quarterback. I'm going to talk about that with the New England game to almost a ridiculous degree. But by keeping the quarterbacks afloat and upright, they allow teams to have everybody else injured, which seems to everybody gets injured except the quarterback. And then they have to figure out, okay, what am I going to do with the guys that I got? And this is what Rodgers is doing. This is what Brady is doing. These are what the great ones do. They say, okay, I don't have this guy anymore. He got traded. I don't have this guy anymore. He became a free agent. He signed away. I don't have this guy. He retired. I don't have this guy. He's suspended. I don't have this guy, you know, for any one of a million. I don't have this guy because he's holding out. And so they get the guys that they suddenly have. and they start working with him. And so Rodgers, yeah, all of a sudden Devontae Adams is his go-to guy, but he's got a couple of these new kids, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown and wait a minute,
Marquez Valdez Scantling. Yeah,
apparently, you can't play for the Packers unless you have three names.
And
now.
Mitch and Scantling, Valdez,
he had over
Scantling,
100 yards.
Oh, but they had three guys with more than 100 receiving guys last night.
And Brady will do the same thing. He'll take guys. I mean, look at what he's starting to do with Josh Gordon, who couldn't do anything in the NFL with anybody else. That's another mark of these quarterbacks. It's like, all right, who am I playing with? You guys need to get up to my level. I'm not playing down to yours. You need to get up to mine. And there are precious few quarterbacks in this league who will do that. And that is why they are consistently at the top.
Can I say something that a name we can't gloss over, Mitch and Bob? Mitch just touched on it. Is there a more fun name right now in the NFL than Equanimeous St. Brown?
Oh.
I mean, that's one of the great football names of all time.
Yeah, they call him EQ, I guess.
Rodgers referenced him after EQ. The game. All right, let me ask you guys this, okay? Did you going into the bye, and you know what schedule the Packers have coming up, okay? Rams and Patriots. And as Rodgers said, we're going to find out what kind of team we have. Do you still feel that the Packers can be the favorite in that division, or is it still Cousins and the Vikings?
I feel I've never bought. I don't know. This is me. I just never bought into any kind of greatness for the Vikings. So I mean, I'm sorry.
Even after last year.
Yeah, not greatness. I don't know. I just don't. No, I'm still somewhat of a skeptic. Yes, I think it's possible they can inject themselves into that.
But it's a better sport if the Mitch, isn't it a better sport when the Packers are in play? I mean, just isn't
well,
it?
Well, it's a better sport when the NFC North is competitive.
Which it is.
And it is. This year it is. You know, so a lot of, in previous years, sometimes they run away with it. You know, you said, Mike, I have to tell you, this is such a state of affairs. You said, do you really think they're going to be the favorites? Or is it the, and I thought you were going to say the Chicago Bears.
I know. I knew
you weren't going to say the Lions, but I thought you might say the Bears.
Right.
And the Bears, you know, kind of revealed themselves against Miami, which I'm sorry, I do not think Miami is that for real. I know they've got a good record so far this year, but to take Chicago off a bye week, you know, they have plenty of rest, and they go in there to play Miami, and they kind of lay an egg, relatively speaking. I know it went to overtime, and they lost on a field goal, but Khalil Mack didn't have a single sack. And with that, I mean, they didn't look like the defense. They gave up 31 points. It didn't look like the defense that they have been in winning their games. So you wonder if that's a, you know, just an aberration or one of those coming back off the off weeks and you can't get your legs underneath you or what. And then you have the Packers, and then you have the Vikings. And let's face it. Kirk Cousins doesn't exude the winning magic thing that Aaron Rodgers does. And so when you think, well, who's going to be there at the end, you're naturally going to go to Rodgers because he casts that kind of shadow. But here is where the reality does come in. One Super Bowl, and you know, he doesn't always win everything. There's some kind of tragedy. There's some kind of Greek drama that happens. It's not often his fault, but there's something that often happens to the Green Bay Packers. I said it before. They won to stay afloat and not be 2-3-1. They didn't win to take over the division. And I still think this is a dogfight. I mean, when you put them up against the Rams, when you put them up against New England, this is when your winning record from the season before can hurt you when you have to play some tough teams. And they are not going to run away with anything, Michael, in the AFC North.
It's going to come
down to the last 2 weeks.
All right, and here's the thing, Bob. When you look at football, and yes, there is a Greek tragedy, and not like real tragedy, to Rodgers' career. Twice in the playoffs, twice, his team lost a coin flip, and he never got to touch the ball again, okay? One after his Hail Mary night, okay? And the difference between this sport and he's as dynamic a figure in football as LeBron is in basketball, Bobby. But in a five-man sport, you have much, you've got the ball all the time. Yeah. And it's the difference between the impact that greatness can have in basketball, and the impact that a quarterback, even an all-time historic, maybe the most talented guy to ever play the position quarterback, can have in his sport.
Can I transfer that over to yet another sport? Since you brought it up, we have a man who was putting up numbers in the sport of baseball that are comparable to anyone who has ever played this game. I repeat that, comparable to, and particularly with all modern metrics, and looking back at in history. Mike Trout is putting together a career that is epic, that is historic, that is first ballot Hall of Fame.
And three postseason games in his
life. And, you know, he's 26 now, and which is prime. So there you go. In baseball, that they are squandering that talent, and that's,
and that's the difference.
Let's go over to the New England game, and it was a couple of days ago. It still warrants talking about, because I, for one, I know Bob, living in New England, you can sometimes almost go the other way. You know, it's like, I can't believe all the greatness that surrounds me, so let me pick against it. And there may have been naysayers in the New England area. I had no doubt they were going to win that game. I know it sounds crazy because Kansas City was, it's just the kind of game the Patriots win. Now, did I know that they were going to win it the absolute way that they won it? Kind of. That's sort of the way I thought it was going to go. I mean, I did not think that they'd be up 24-9 and blow a lead. That was about the only surprise to me, that the second half started to come apart.
Well, Mitch, how about that they lost the lead then in the fourth quarter?
Right. I mean, normally, it's Belichick making adjustments at halftime, and his team always looks better in the second half than the other team does because of the adjustments. And here they kind of fall apart. Brady gets stripped. A strip sack, that's unusual. He made some bad decisions. There were some bad throws. But I'm sorry, and I know that this didn't turn the game when you look at it in the big picture, but when you saw that play where Brady, it was a third down, I think, where Brady had to scramble, and he's in the arms of Breland Speaks, and Speaks lets go of him. I've watched that a freaking thousand times, and I go, did he get hit with a dart or something? like a poison dart? And he had to and he admitted that, when he had him in the grasp, he couldn't see.
He threw the ball, right?
Threw the ball, so he goes, I don't want to get a penalty down here. So he lets him go, and Brady runs into the end zone. And if this isn't the culmination of the frustration of defensive players trying to tackle quarterbacks, I don't know what is.
And Mitch and Bob, here's the thing. And Bobby and I were talking about this before we started today, Mitch, okay? This is why Chris Collinsworth is great. Chris Collinsworth, in the moment, identified exactly what had happened there. Okay, he was so fixed on Speaks, and then they replayed it, and it verified everything that Collinsworth thought in the moment. And Bob, you know this. When Brady scores, he scores on a sneak, okay? That is an extremely unusual run for Tom Brady.
Oh, completely. I mean, it stunned the onlookers, that I was with. The key to the whole thing, though, is the pump fake. Apparently, Breland Speaks bought the pump
fake. His arm came all the way forward. I thought he threw it, too.
So the kid's a rookie, but he bought the pump fake. And good, I like his thought process that he doesn't want to do anything stupid there, knowing he knew. But it's just one of those things. It worked to their benefit, let's face it. But absent the pump fake, it's not going to happen, I wouldn't think. He's going to tackle him. Yeah, well, that was a margin. That shows you, how often we talk about
that. That's how close it was.
The margin of victory is so thin sometimes, and so quirky and so capricious. In all sports, there are little things that happen, and that was huge. So,
one more time in that big picture thing, Kansas City Chiefs did not need to win that game. They were 5-0 coming in. They either go to 6-0 or they fall to 5-1. They're not tumbling out of anything. The New England Patriots, on the other hand, do not want to be 3-3 after six games. And just like Rodgers, when it absolutely has to happen, you're going to pick on one of those two number 12s to win the game for you. And I was not surprised at all that he is getting used to his new cast, that they are rising up. And, we were talking about the Patriots just not being the Patriots earlier in the season, and here they are at 4-2. They're tied with Miami. I do not expect Miami to hold this up, and don't tell me the Jets or Buffalo are going to be there at the end. And one more time.
What?
They're going to be – I don't mean to disappoint the whole state of New York. Yeah. But, they're going to be there at the end again. And it's just, at some point you have to just tip your hat.
All right, here's the play. Here – here's the play, Bob. Okay, here's the play. Breland speaks. That's a great moment. But Brady's sheer Bradiness and Rodgers' Rodgersness last night was the third and short throw. I mean, I think they lose the game if he doesn't throw. He throws the ball down the field. And the guy's, Bobby, the guy's holding on to Chris Hogan's arm, okay? Mm-hmm. Chris Hogan makes the catch. They go down. They take the lead back. And again, Mahomes and Brady had pretty much the same statistical night. The two guys threw for a combined nearly 700 yards, okay? 23-36 for Mahomes, 352 yards. He threw more touchdown passes. Brady only had one touchdown pass in this game, 24 for 35, 340, okay? So they're playing the same statistical game, except Brady at the end made every stinking throw that he needed to make, just like number 12 of the Packers did last night.
Here's the summation of the game, though. There was a win-win. Both teams walked out of there with a win.
I agree.
The Patriots, I have to be thinking, I don't want to see those guys again.
Right.
Please,
and
God.
And in Kansas City.
Please,
and
God,
in Kansas City.
In January, someone else take care of them. We'll deal with, we don't want. And Kansas City is thinking, let me at them. We can beat those MFs. We can beat them. And our quarterback had a shaky first half, but our kid figured it out in the second half, and the monster numbers in the second half. And you know that and the other dynamic that hasn't changed, both neither team has a quality defense, they may be limited in the final analysis. Well, I'm telling you, Kansas City cannot feel anything. Yeah, frustration. We didn't get the W, but they come out of there.
Can I,
Mike,
say
you
two
know what
other
like?
Names?
Here's what, Mike, you'll relate to this, I'm sure. This is like the last day of the 07 season when the Giants lost to the Patriots, and they walked out of that stadium and said, we can beat those guys.
38-35. Yep, we can play with them. And there was the feeling that year that Coughlin shouldn't play, you know, that they shouldn't play their best guy. Okay, can we throw two other names after we've had this great quarterback conversation today? Mitch, can I throw a couple of names at you? Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt. Oh, my God. Oh, no. Is there a more dynamic combination in the sport right now than those two guys?
No.
You know, I keep thinking that if this team was located in L.A. or New York, they'd have come up with some kind of, you know, Showtime nickname for the Kansas City offense.
Oh, man.
They are on special teams as well as regular offense. They are arguably the most explosive team, and that's the word that comes to mind, explosive team in the NFL in terms of being able to make something from, you know, nothing. Witness Mahomes' pass to Tyreek Hill for 75 yards.
Oh my God.
And it wasn't like a screen pass that then he escaped and ran.
No, he had
a scramble to find him. He threw high. The guy leapt in the air and pulled the thing out of the ground and then just ran past everybody. The speed of that team combined with Mahomes' escapability and his increasingly accurate arm make them just, if they weren't in Kansas City, I keep saying, you know, Kansas City just doesn't have that sexy appeal in the history of their franchise and the city. But they are the sexiest offense going in terms of, if you want highlight films, you're going to go look at those guys that you mentioned, Hunt and Hill and Mahomes, every single week. And it also brings up, and we'll hop off of football after this, that was, I'm trying to remember, the third or fourth game where both teams scored over 40 points already
this
season.
It's turned into college football,
man. Third one.
And last year it didn't happen at all.
Yeah.
Now, what do we attribute that to? Is it the new quarterback rules that you can't touch the guy and everybody, these guys are all standing up a lot longer and making these big plays?
I think that there's a lot of stuff going on. Obviously, we're in the era of the big but mobile quarterback time in pro football. I think the rule, you can't dismiss the rules. They have gotten what they wanted. And Mitch, what I just said is true. They're putting up college football scores now. There's a reason why people love college football the way they do right now, and it's because a video game offense, let's say. And again, we're talking, what two games are we talking about? 43-40 and 33-30 on their showcase nighttime games, Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football.
But just to add to the playmaker thing, thing you're talking about, Mitch, in the highlight film, we ought to make note that there was a 97-yard kickoff return by Tremont Smith that did not result in a touchdown.
Right. Well, I mean, special teams are all part. And, you know, when was gone is the day of the 9-3 final, you know? I mean, well, yeah,
hallelujah,
remember.
From,
yeah, right. And that's what they want, and that's what they got.
Hey, can I just say one other thing? And because the Chiefs have lost, and I don't think the Chiefs are going anywhere, I did check the standings this morning, and there is a team from, Mitch, the new football capital of the world, right. Los Angeles, California,
new sports
who is only one game behind the Chiefs. What is L.A. now, 10-2 for this season with the Rams and the Chargers? Phillip Rivers and the Chargers are quietly having a really good year.
Yep. He's quietly having a great career, by the way.
Well, he's got to get something done in the postseason. We'll have that discussion on another week. But Philip Rivers is his own worst enemy at the absolute most important times. And he's a guy who's gotten tons of statistics and makes some great plays in the regular season and just got a history of not getting it done at the most critical time in the postseason.
Listen, I'm so glad that we ended up doing this on Tuesday because we were able to include the Packers and the 49ers of the football. All right, now we got to get to baseball because, there is a lot going on. But first, a word from our new friends from Gillette. And if you listen to our podcast, you know, I come from a Gillette family. I'm so happy to have them as a sponsor now. My dad was a Gillette guy. I'm a Gillette guy. I have three sons who are Gillette guys. And, you know, I'm not, there's nothing elaborate about my shaving routines. I shave once a day. I've got three Gillette razors, the Mach 3, the Fusion, the Pro Shield. They're all great. The shaving cream is great. And it's a family tradition that will not change in the Lupica family. And here's the good news. Now you can get Gillette quality blades at the best value and convenience with Gillette On Demand. Now listen up. With Gillette On Demand, you can get blades delivered directly to your door. And guys, how many times have you gone to the pharmacy and wanted to buy razors, and you got to get the guy because he's got to come and unlock the plastic thing, which would stump me for hours and hours. Okay, but now you can get them sent to your home. For if you're already a subscriber to On Demand, as I am, I can just talk about how easy this makes it. Okay, subscribe to Gillette On Demand today and get 50% off your first order with special offer code SPORTSREPORTERS50. That's for the 50% at checkout. Enjoy free shipping and every fourth order free with subscription. Visit Gillette online at GilletteOnDemand.com and use SPORTSREPORTERS50 for 50% off your first order. I'm telling you, it is great. This is a class sponsor. This is a class association. We are happy to have Gillette. And as we move to baseball, now that the National League Championship Series is 2-1, Mitch and Bob, it's clear now it's a Milwaukee Brewers world, and the rest of us are just living in it right now.
Well, what are they? 12 out of 13, right?
Yep.
It's a revelation to most of America. You know, they did all this pretty much down the stretch because there's always a glamour attached to the Cubs and all that.
And the Dodgers.
Right. A romanticism attached to the Cubs and a glamour attached to the Dodgers. How's that for a differentiation? Yeah. Meanwhile, our Hardy Brew crew has played some wonderful baseball. There you go. I mean, and now they're in very good shape in there, but for one swing at a bat, and you know that's the way Justin Turner home run, we'd be in wow, you know. Thank for the Dodgers have to be thanking God for that because they are so close to being down 3-0.
Well, the first two games were kind of mirror images of one another, and I made these notes: 23 pitching changes, 7.5 hours of baseball for 18-inning games, 18 innings worth of baseball. We knew with Milwaukee it was going to be a lot of pitching changes, but the length of time, the chess match of this stuff, correct me if I'm wrong, but in all three cases, like the games ended with tying runs in scoring position, right? Even Monday's game with 4-0, but the bases were loaded. When the Dodgers made the last out. So it's more dramatic even than the score looked on 4-0. But I was asked by, I'm out on book tour for a new book that I wrote, and I was being interviewed by a Wisconsin station, I guess, or something. And of course, you know, I wrote a book called The Next Person You Meet in Heaven, and the first question is, so how do you think Milwaukee's going
to
do?
We'll get to your book in a minute. Yeah, we'll get to the book in a minute.
We'll get to your book. We'll get to your book in 9 minutes of this 9.5 minute interview. But let's first spend 9 minutes on the Milwaukee Brewers, and that's okay. That's the way the world works. But they were like, "Do you think we can get it done?" And this was before the game was played, and I said, "Well, you know, sometimes when a team is on one of those magical rolls where they just keep winning and just keep winning, when they are brought back to earth, as you thought maybe happened in game two, the magic is broken. You know, it's snapped and it's your Cinderella and everything turns, the pumpkin is back." And so I thought that game three was really critical to see, all right, is this just a roll? Or are they really great? And they came back with arguably their strongest game of this series against Los Angeles, which and doing it not, you know, with Christian Yelich knocking everything in, but doing it, you know, with a lot of other guys contributing. That makes me feel like they can win this series. You know, they're not just relying on a momentum.
And you know who's introducing himself to the American public is Orlando Arcia.
And a very underrated manager. Craig Counsell has done an unbelievable job, a former World Series hero with the Marlins as a player. But do you guys think, and he's a very good player, but it's like in Little League. I coached a lot of Little League baseball in my life, and the ball will find your worst fielder, okay? If Yasmani Grandal keeps coming up in big moments... The next meaningful game the Dodgers are going to play is next April. Isn't it amazing that he keeps showing up in these big spots?
Well, they're benching him again for game four. And that's another thing that makes me kind of favor Milwaukee. There's some bad karma, bad juju going on in Los Angeles with fans booing. Yeah. And then the players complaining that, you know, well, you're quiet all game, and then you boo Grandal, you know. I mean, you don't want that at home. That's not a good thing to come playing at home. And other teams, if they're smart, somehow pounce on that. So today's huge, you know. By the way,
Mitch and Bob, I don't know if you stayed around for the post game, but there was an amazing steroid era phony convention after the game when Alex Rodriguez is interviewing Ryan Braun, okay? And it's like the record has been wiped completely clean with these guys. Everybody forgets now that Rodriguez lied his ass off through his whole problems with Major League Baseball, and that Braun blamed his problems, remember? The guy who collected his urine sample. And there they are, like they're the mayor and the deputy mayor of baseball last night. Oh, my God.
Yeah, what Braun did was really pretty much unforgivable.
Right. I mean, didn't he come right out and basically say, you know, just declared that he was absolutely innocent and totally blameless? And then, wait a minute.
It was almost Lance Armstrongish, but
But the Brewers, came back to the Brewers. Man, they have been the hottest team in the world. So nothing their fans are seeing right now is surprising them. And they got even though it's only into the sixth last night, Chacín pitched the kind of game they needed, at least a little length from one of their starting pitches.
Into the sixth inning is a, you know, of course.
I know. It feels like it's a 14-inning performance. It's like Spawn versus Marichal.
You were alluding to time earlier and how long it take, and the pitching changes. That game at 3 hours and 25 minutes is thus far in the LCS version.
Don't tell me it's the shortest.
Shortest game played thus far of the five.
God, don't tell me that.
And tonight's start time, 9:09. Eastern time. Start time, 9:09.
At least we get an earlier game in the East and in the Midwest, Mitch, from the Asteroids and the Red Sox.
I mean, we are now to the point where we are thankful if the first digit of game time is in the four in our series.
And
it's, and you know, it, It's we have that. I've never seen so many 3-2 counts in my life as I'm seeing in these in this Red Sox Astros series. But it's not just the pitching changes. It is the caution with which they play. You know, the game and
hey, Mitch. Else. Let me ask you a question. Who do you think Major League Baseball is rooting for in the World Series? Red Sox versus Dodgers or
Astros?
Houston versus Milwaukee?
Milwaukee. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But be careful because you know I would actually favor that one right now. And
entertainment wise, no, there's no.
Well, the TV gods don't always get what
they
want.
I don't care what
TV wants.
That's not
what this is. But let's talk about Boston, Houston, because this is great. I mean, you know, we expected a great series. So far, it hasn't disappointed. And I don't know how you guys feel because you're right there. But I was actually happy that David Price didn't get another loss. I know it wasn't a win, you know, but when a guy like I was kind of marveling that he's sitting there, he's talking about, I'm so happy to be part of a win.
Baby steps.
Win in the postseason. He's 0-10 before that. Just did not have to explain himself after a postseason game, you know, why he was crappy, even though he didn't get the W. And of course, that you can't go back to Houston. Down 0-2.
No. That was a series ender if they had lost Sunday night. 100%.
So what do we think of Game 3?
Bob, you have seen the momentum shifts of this game. Okay, and I got a parting shot about how the Red Sox needed Mookie Betts to step up on Sunday night when he did. The odd thing, there's so many interesting elements to this series, guys. The odd thing is for all of the hand-wringing about the Red Sox set up relievers, the sketchiest reliever they now have is their outgoing closer, Craig Kimbrel.
They officially have a hot attack closer now. He's completely entered into
Wicked
the category.
Hot.
He's a hot attack closer. He is unreliable and frightening. All right? I mean, he is. He's not. And this has been going on all the month of September. He lost his control of his curveball. And then that was the explanation for worse September problems. But as you saw against the Yankees, he had no control. He had no command of anything. And the other night was, you know, he was sailing. He got two guys out, and then boom, two shots. And then the last out, you know, when that ball left the bat, I have a very good view of it. And I thought at the very least it was going to scrape the
and
wall.
And it's like Gary Sanchez's ball at Yankee Stadium in Game 4 when Kimbrel was trying to pitch the Yankees back into the series.
I mean, so anyway, he's a problem now. You're right. The soft underbelly of the team was supposed to be the bridge to get from the starting pitchers to him. And in fact, those guys have basically pitched very well the other night and did a fine job they had to do. I'm talking about guys like Matt Barnes and Brian Brazier
and Mr. Porcello.
Yeah,
Can
I ask a question about this? I feel that I am the caretaker of former Tigers on all these other teams, and I was in Houston on this book tour the other day, and I actually began by saying, by the way, you're welcome for Justin Verlander. And it got a, you know, I'm like hail fellow well met wherever I go now because there's former Tigers in their cities. What is going on with Rick Porcello? We sent you him as a starter. Did you not get the instructions that he's supposed to start? He won a Cy Young, and here he's a middle, the second reliever setup man.
Oh, he'll
one
be,
inning,
he'll be
eighth inning guy
great
all
eighth
of a sudden.
Innings. He'll he's be pitched. Starting. He'll be starting game.
When?
And Mitch, he played. No, no, no.
What
Mitch,
game is he going to start? He was supposed to start today.
No,
start
Mitch, tomorrow.
Mitch, he pitched a terrific
inning.
He'll
start
four,
tomorrow,
he
will, Bob, no, unless Mitch, they call him in today in the eighth.
No, he's not going to get called in today. Mitch, he pitched a terrific game at Yankee Stadium starting last Tuesday night. They got him out of there a little sooner than a lot of us thought he was going to. But we saw this in game one against the Yankees. They brought him in the eighth inning of game one. Okay, and you could see how much he wanted to be out there, and he was in. They took him out after an infield hit, but it didn't matter. He was totally in control of that moment. He was totally in control of the moment, and he is another guy who is looking to slay some previous postseason dragons in this postseason.
Remember that we had the narrative entering the playoffs is that neither Sale nor Price nor Porcello had ever won a game in the postseason, right. and that was part of the narrative. And they all want to rectify themselves.
They had won games, Bob. They hadn't won starts.
Their record was 2-13.
There was a this combined.
This is the narrative of postseason baseball, Mitch. That's been going on. If we want to say at least since Madison Baumgartner, right? At least since that. I mean, last year with the Astros, who
Charlie
closes
Morton.
Out? Charlie Morton.
Charlie Morton.
This is we've seen it with the. Go back to 1988, Hershiser. So, you know, yes, it's part of the postseason baseball thing.
It seems to me that it used to be more of the game six, game seven kind of approach, not games one and two. Okay. You know, you really are taking a chance there. Okay, so you use Porcello because you need him because you really don't want to go down 0-2 to Houston. Okay, so you pull that off. You win your 1-1. But now... Okay, the guy who was supposed to start game three, instead of him, you're going with Eovaldi. You lose that game. Was it because of the starting pitcher? You know, you're playing with fire earlier and earlier now. And this whole approach of, you know, we'll start, our relief pitchers will come in the top of the second, you know, and we'll just play the rest of the eight innings with relief pitchers. It really makes it, you know, we used to argue about all the National League versus the American League having to maneuver with the designated hitter versus not. That's been blown up. I mean, like both sides now, you don't even worry about that because you're switching pitchers so frequently and you're bringing them in for one pitch or one inning and starters are relievers and relievers are starters. And we'll see how this all plays out over the long run. I know you say, okay, Porcello's scheduled to start game four. Let's see what first happens in game three. And, you know, they've already...
No, he's not going to pitch Porcello.
They do not have an option, Mitch.
They have no option.
No, I'm not saying he's going. No, I'm not saying he's going to play today. I'm just saying let's see how that move worked out to push him to game four. And, you know, if Eovaldi lays an egg.
He pitched that eighth inning against the Yankees and was brilliant at Yankee Stadium while he was out there. What is interesting about what Alex Cora, who watched what A.J. Hinch did closely sitting next to Hinch last year. Just remember, okay, in Game 7 of the American League Championship Series last year, Charlie Morton started, Lance McCullers finished, okay? In Game 7 of the World Series, Lance McCullers started, Charlie Morton pitched the last four innings, and they were both brilliant. And maybe the most dominant inning I've seen outside of Josh Hader in these playoffs was the eighth inning that Chris Sale pitched against the Yankees in game four, where he was absolutely freaking filthy.
Is Sale out of the hospital, by the way?
Yeah, he's out of the hospital. He's on the way to Houston. He's scheduled to start game five.
What was that? Just
that came totally out of nowhere. Mitch, I'm sitting there in the ballpark, and I'm trying to monitor, of course, the football and the baseball at the same time. And all of a sudden, the thing flashes up, you know, the little notation at the top of your phone. Chris Sale admitted to the hospital with stomach problems with what? Where did this come from? Totally out of the blue.
And can I say something about the Astros? Because I still think the Astros are the most complete baseball team still playing. I think it was quite unexpected the way the Red Sox thumped around Gerrit Cole the other night. Altuve, who's a little dinged up, okay, with a knee, and Alex Bregman, and I know Alex Bregman has walked a lot, have combined for one hit in the first two games of this series. And they have got to hit if the Astros are going. I know Springer has turned into Mr. October. Gurriel had a big swing. Josh Reddick had a big swing. But Altuve was the most valuable player in the league in 2017. Right. Alex Bregman was their most valuable player in Houston this year. And they have not hit so far, and they got to hit.
Well, last little upbeat note before we go to the NBA. Start time 5:09. So that means that by midnight you'll probably be getting around to the ninth inning, and you might have a chance of actually seeing that game end, and not have to watch it on SportsCenter the next morning. Okay. All right. So let's hop over to the NBA kicking into gear here, and you know, my feeling is that Golden State still is so head and shoulders above everybody else, but the coming teams are actually more interesting to me than Golden State, which is a narrative that we've seen before. Those coming teams being over in the East and actually playing each other, I think, tonight, right? The Celtics and the 76ers.
Celtics and Sixers are
Boston. It's a pretty good start of the season. I don't know. Do you see these teams, Bob? You're our basketball guru. Are they on even ground with one another as they start this series, as they start this season?
Boston, Philly?
Yeah.
In my opinion, I respect Philly a lot. And the X factor with Philly, now Boston handled them very easily in the playoffs last year, very easily. And Embiid bothered them, but that's fine. They had no trouble winning in fairly easy five. Markelle Fultz was obviously a zero factor. His rookie year was a complete washout, which included having mental, phobia problems about a shot, which was akin to the baseball players who can't throw the ball anymore over the plate. Anyway, he appears to be better. And if he can contribute, he was the number one pick in the draft. Let's not forget. We don't know to what extent he's going to augment them, but I like the moves they made. I like them. I respect them. I think they're very good. I also think that there's a lot of other competition available in the East. I think Toronto with Leonard, assuming he gets back to his top five player in the league status, is going to be good. I think Milwaukee with the Greek Freak, who gave the Celtics more trouble than Philadelphia did last year,
right,
is going to be
true.
Good. I think Indiana's going to be good. I think Miami is a quietly sneaky team. I think there's going to be definite competition in the East. And Boston, the biggest issue, we all think, assuming that Hayward, and who is not going to be Hayward, projecting and the guy they remember till maybe December or even January, is the depth is a blessing and it's a curse if the guys can't mentally handle the reduction of minutes that some of them are going to have.
Okay, Bobby,
most notably Rozier and Morris.
All right, let me ask you this. What have you seen of whatever you have seen of Gordon Hayward so far in the
Gordon
in the
Hayward
preseason?
Is not all the way back, and he will first want to tell you, in addition to the fact that he's quoted in the paper, Michael, this morning, as saying that he's still aware of his ankle. Oh, boy. Aware of it, and that, and he also is filing a back problem right now. He's had flashes of the old brilliance, but he's not all the way back. And he will be on a short leash minutes wise. They're projecting in somewhere in the 20s, 25 max to start off. So he's an addition to it. He's not, and so he's not all the way back. But the guy who looks like himself, the guy who has been, everything that you remember him being in his heyday is Irving. Irving is ready to go.
And in the era of triple superstars being mandatory for you to have a chance, I have to say that the Celtics, we always talk about Hayward and Irving, but Jason Tatum, fills out that role pretty damn well. And unless he has a personality change from last year, he's going to be a major star. And they have three stars as far as I'm concerned with those three guys. And then the other guys that you mentioned too, you say that should be any NBA team's biggest problem. How are these guys going to adjust to fewer minutes after they were great players for us last year? Because all that means to me is that you've got a great deep team and they got a pretty damn good coach up there who seems to manage to get guys to play and get them to deal. I mean, look, he did a much harder thing, which was get guys to step up when the two superstars were gone and turn them into a really competitive, threatening team in the postseason. That, to me, is a much harder thing to do than to have really great players who have to say, well, I'm only going to play, 22 minutes tonight instead of 34. A good coach can manage that. A good coach knows how to do that. I just see them as 2 years ahead of the 76ers, in terms of the mature talent. I like the 76ers rawness. Joel Embiid, I know he's really impressive because he's just physically really impressive, but I listened, there was a big piece on him and they did an interview, on, I guess it was ESPN. And he's talking about, well, yes, for me, I plan to be, the MVP and when I start hearing that kind of stuff, I'd be like, stop talking about you want your year to be, you're going to be the MVP. Let's talk about winning something first in Philadelphia. And I just don't trust that whole thing yet. I think there's some maturing that has to go on with him and him and Simmons may get along, may not get along. Fultz, we don't know because, as you say, he was damaged goods last year. I do not see them on the same level. I just don't. I see a healthy Boston should be head and shoulders above the East now with LeBron gone.
And I mentioned Toronto handled them last year and has had confidence to start with, even with DeRozan. Now they've got Leonard. I think that Toronto has no fear of the Boston Celtics.
Hey,
I have to tell you, the two guys.
I have a question for you guys about the West. How is the presence of a guy that, well, in New York, we think of as the old rally killer, Carmelo Anthony, going to be reunited with his old friend Mike D'Antoni in Houston?
Mike, I'm glad you brought them up because we just remind people how close they came with an injured Paul to upending the Rockets. I mean, the Warriors last year. I think they have to be respected. All right, I've said this, Mike. I've had this. This is like the broken record category, but I'm going to say
it. I love it though. Say it again
for the millionth time. I have been advocating for years, plural, that he would be best served, he being Melo, coming off the bench as an instant offense guy. He let him come in, hit his four jump shots in a row, and then sit him down and let him watch.
You're
the rest
talking
of
about Olympics, Carmelo.
Yes, right. That Olympics. That is where he should be served now. And here he is in a situation that is exactly the role that he could serve for them. If he could adjust and accept who he is, accept his mortality, accept this, and then he could be a huge asset. I think it's conceivable. It is potentially possible. It is not beyond the realm of comprehension, all right? I'm hedging this as much as I can, that he could be a major factor for them if he would come with the right attitude.
Well, you can't talk about an NBA preview without the Golden State Warriors, and just because it's old and just because they're familiar doesn't mean that they're still not the story of the league. And I just, yes, Houston, yeah, maybe Oklahoma City. I don't know what kind of noise LA will end up making by the time. You cannot discount LeBron James. You can't. He deserves to be given the benefit of the doubt, even with a brand new cast, because he has done it year after year, and he made, you know, Cleveland a factor the first year he went back there, and he got him to a championship, and he has a lot of young gun talent out there. I mean, it's a lot of young, and he has proven to, you know, he adjusts his game. He's a great teammate, unlike Carmelo Anthony. He's the polar opposite of a superstar. He makes guys better, sometimes to a fault. Sometimes he's passing up things that he ought to do, but during the course of the regular season, that doesn't really matter. If they lose a couple of games here or there because LeBron could have taken a shot and instead passed it off or whatever, he's bringing those guys along. At this point, he's more the coach than the coach is. And maybe they're going to make some noise, but they're not going to hold up against a healthy Golden State team, are they? Is anybody?
No, and I got one other guy. I want to throw one other guy in before we get to parting shots, because he, to me, the most intriguing addition that any team made in the offseason is Boogie Cousins going to the Warriors.
Thank you.
And he's been an incredibly talented, incredibly immature guy for a long time, almost since he left Kentucky. Now, he's either going to be make them unbeatable, or he's going to be a pain in the ass.
But we're going to have to wait until January, apparently, to see that. I'm glad you did that, Mike.
Don't you agree that's the most intriguing acquisition?
Mike, you stole my thunder with that one. I wanted to make sure we acknowledge Boogie. Because one other thing is Kevin Durant, you know, this whole he pissed everybody off by going there, and if he leaves, he's going to piss everybody off by leaving.
Even guys like my buddy Frank Isola, he does, for all the pipe dreams about LeBron in New York City, Frank actually believes that there is some possibility that Kevin Durant, when he gets the chance, is going to come to New York.
Well, we've watched the once proud and then down on its luck city of Los Angeles return to glory on all kinds of levels. You know, now basketball, football with two teams, and you know, it's not impossible, Mike, that the Knicks could one day be good again. I know it must feel
there. You're just
not impossible,
Mitch. You sound a little skeptical because our kids have won a grand total of one playoff series, yeah. One since 2001. One. It's almost unbelievable that this has happened to one of the most. Mitch and Bob, you know this, okay? Every time I still hear Madison Square Garden referred to as the Mecca, I always say, Mecca, what?
Give
what?
It it's a little bit like saying the circus is what every kid wants to go see anymore, you know, instead of a video game. Before we do those parting shots, so an NBA discussion, and it's not about a winning team, but it is about behavior. A moment on Jimmy Butler and this whole thing here. It's really the soap opera of this, and I have to say is I've been kind of disappointed in this process. Forget Jimmy Butler, because I don't expect a whole lot more. It's the way the media has kind of taken his side in this. Like, you know, poor Jimmy Butler has to play with some guys who, you know, aren't up to his level of talent. He deserves his trio of superstars, and he deserves his LeBron move and take his talents where he wants to go. And they're forcing him to play. Look at this. I mean, they actually want him to come to practice, and they want him to play on the team. Who are these people?
Why won't they let him go somewhere and make as much money as he wants to, Mitch? Yeah. Why are they? This is so inhumane, okay? Okay, why won't they let Jimmy Butler be happy and go play with the cool kids himself? This is a tragedy. It really is.
I mean, but have you observed the same thing? Like, there seems to be a sympathy towards him in the media that's just really weird.
And then I saw the soundbite, Mitch, the other day where he says, "Oh, why do you guys want to keep talking about the trade? We've got a game to play." What? Shut up.
Oh, we've got a game to play. Yeah. Oh, if he plays. I just wanted to throw that in.
No, it's I'm good. Glad we well, anyway, it's time for our party shots. So Ryan, why don't you lead off?
Yeah, why not? Now, so guys, I hustled from Fenway on Sunday night to the closest local establishment with my daughter Jessica and my friend John Benson to catch the end of the Pats Chiefs game. We walk in just as Tom Brady is somehow escaping the clutches of rookie Breeland Speaks and rumbling into the end zone for a rare rushing TD. By the end of the game, Fenway Johnny's was jammed with fans, and when Steven Guskowski kicked the game-winning field goal with no time left, there was also a bunch of people looking through the windows on Brookline Avenue at the big screen TVs inside. Now, what's my point? It's that we were all united as sports fans in a way that transcends all, I stress, all other forms of leisure time entertainment. Even concert goers do not share the type of communal feeling available only to us as sports fans. And if you want to know what this city was like Sunday night, 81% of TVs in the Boston market were tuned to either the Pats Chiefs or the Sox Astros. Think about that.
You can go back through baseball history and find one unlikely October hero after another. I remember being in old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium nearly a quarter century ago, and the Braves were in the bottom of the last against the Pirates in a tremendous National League Championship Series. Francisco Cabrera came to the plate for the Braves, and somebody behind me in the press box said, "Who the hell is Francisco Cabrera?" And I turned around to the guy and I said, "The kind of guy who usually ends up in baseball history. Cabrera got a hit, the Braves went to the World Series." But you know what? There are a lot more likely heroes in October. Mookie Betts was that for the Red Sox the other night in Game 2. Betts didn't get the biggest hit of that game. Jackie Bradley Jr. did with the bases loaded. But Betts hit a double and scored in the first and hit an RBI double in the eighth and looked like the MVP of his team and the league, and his team won. Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, says that some guys can and some guys can't at this time of year. When the Red Sox needed their best player to be one who could the other night, he was.
Another week, another no-show for Le'Veon Bell. What began as a question mark and moved into a protest has now dangerously edged towards insignificance. We all know the story on Bell, arguably the best running back in the game, at least when he plays. He has been frustrated by getting the franchise tag in Pittsburgh and finally said, "Enough. How can I possibly play for $14.5 million? So he's been sitting out and sitting out. And each week that goes by, he costs his team, he costs himself, and the Steelers grapple for a new identity. In backup running back James Conner, they have temporarily found it. On Sunday, Conner, who's getting better and better, rushed for 135 yards and two touchdowns as the Steelers beat a really good Bengals team and kept their weird season afloat. After Connor's impressive performance, Le'Veon Bell actually tweeted to him. He wrote, "Damn, James." Obviously a man of few words. Does "damn, James" mean "wow, you're good, James"? Or does "damn, James" mean "damn, James, you're making this holdout thing really tough for me"? Whatever the case, Bell is now not expected to come back this week, even though he once predicted he would. There's some talk about next week. Who knows? Bell has said he misses football and plans to play hard when he does come back. But you wonder how he can be pulling for a teammate in one tweet and yanking against his team in the next. He's cost himself more dollars than he ever would have made on a big contract year. And he's hurt his chance at a postseason with the Steelers, where he really gets to shine and be attractive for other suitors. Damn, Le'Veon. It's confusing. That's going to wrap things up for this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do it normally every Monday and Friday, except when the block in New York blows up its generator or whatever happened. So we will be back on Friday as per norm. And if you like this podcast, you can tell your friends they can get it wherever they get popular podcasts, on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or radio.com. And we will see you on Friday. Until then, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.